Good day, fellow Symphonians of the Internet. My name is Ryan Smith.
And my name is Jack Schmidt.
And you are listening to SymphoniCast. All right, so the ballot for the National Council was released today. What do you think of that, Jack?
It's a pretty interesting read. I was expecting it a little sooner, but going through it, there's some interesting questions being asked and things for the National Council to decide on.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I was definitely thinking about last week was because in that letter from the National President, he brought up how the National Council does have precedent being called on. They were called on in the 1960s. So I wanted to see what is he kind of referring to for that. And I found a good reading for that from the Centennial book. So I was thinking we break this up into two parts here. First part, we go ahead and talk a little bit about the last time National Council was called, and then we go into the ballot. What do you say?
Sounds like a good plan to me.
All right. So the resource I'm going to use for this, as many Symphonians know about, is the Phi Mu Alpha Symphonia, A Centennial History, specifically the second edition written by Dr. T. Jervis Underwood. I wouldn't say this is definitive, but a lot of people, you know, do take it at face value, and it is a pretty good source. There's obviously going to be some bias in here because this brother was definitely, as a historian, he was involved in a lot of the events. But just so we keep that in mind, overall, it's a pretty good read. I am going to start at the section in Chapter 5, Part 12, so 5.12. The Triennial Reorganization. The changes in fraternity governance instituted by the Triennial Reorganization, so designated from its inception to differentiate it from the previous pattern of holding national conventions every 2 years, were the most significant in the fraternity's history, eclipsing even the innovations of 1922. Although the manner in which the changes were accomplished and suspicions about the motivations behind them created controversy, the course of events in subsequent years proved the wisdom of the plan's designers. So, pretty much what happened was, I'm going to break this part down a bit more or summarize it because we don't need to read through the whole thing. But in 1962, the executive committee created a committee, according to the minutes, to be able to investigate or research the idea of reorganizing the national structure, like into having a national convention triennially instead of biannually.
Interesting.
Yeah. So to get started, events at the 1962 convention did much to stimulate and further shape the committee's plan. The decade of the 60s saw a rapid rise of student activism on college campuses, leading up to protests against the war in Vietnam and the explosive campus riots of the early 70s. In 1962, the leaders of Sinfonia faced a group of collegians who were much more involved in their organization than had been previous generations, less inclined to go along, and increasingly impatient with the difficulty of being recognized on the convention floor and with having motions declared out of order. That kind of sounds familiar. Needless to say, there was strong sentiment among the collegiate members, shared by some of the governors as well, that they should possess a stronger voice in running their fraternity. The fact that the executive committee, with 7 votes, and the governors, with approximately 30 votes, faced a group of collegians with over 200 votes, a group of collegians, moreover, who were no longer complacent and appeared to be on the edge of rebellion, was perceived by many to be the compelling reason for the alteration and balance included in the triennial plan. What do you feel about those motivations right there? Like, I think that vote count kind of says it right there. 200 collegians versus 30 province governors and 7 NEC members. So 37 alumni versus
the 200 collegians. I mean, it sounds like it's pretty one-sided that the collegiate body at the time had a single idea they wanted to follow through, and the alumni just didn't see it the same.
Yeah, so those are the motivations going into this. And keep in mind that NEC is the one that pushed this idea of switching to triennial. So at least my take on it from what I understand in this reading is that they're kind of alluding to the alumni being concerned that they're going to get overthrown by these rebellious collegiate brothers. So the stated rationale for the reorganization presented at the executive committee meeting of July 10th, 1963, was simply the difficulty that some delegates experience in attending conventions. The travel time itself exacerbated the problem. Train travel was the prescribed mode for which delegates were being reimbursed. The expense of air travel was prohibitive for over 200 delegates. The triennial plan called for a representative assembly with each province represented by its governor and one collegiate member. So what we have today. The basics of the plan were presented by mail ballot to the National Council on September 7th, 1963. Only 16 negative ballots were returned, and the plan was declared approved. But it must be noted that, according to the Constitution at the time, an unreturned ballot was counted as a positive vote. The minutes of July 10th, 1964 do not reveal either the number of positive votes returned or the number of unreturned ballots. The basic plan having been legally approved, a second ballot outlining the triennial plan in detail was mailed to the National Council on January 31st, 1964.
That's an interesting way to be counting votes.
Yeah.
The ballot doesn't get returned. It's automatically a positive.
I'm just filling in blanks here. I'm going to assume the fraternity's best interest here where they sent sent these through the mail USPS. I'm hoping like it required a signature to like say that, you know, they received it, right?
Right, because if a brother never receives it, then he can never return it.
The vote.
And if he never returns it, then it's a positive, even though he may not actually feel that way.
Yeah, so 16 negative ballots. And then on top of that, the NEC never officially released the details of like what the final poll numbers were. So they didn't say how many actually voted in favor, how many were against, and then how many were unreturned. Don't worry, guys, that's no longer in the Constitution and bylaws. Instead, now these days, an unreturned ballot is kind of a vote of abstention. And that is why... Oh, how many ballots have to be returned in order for them to count?
Over half.
Yes. So if over half of the ballots return and then 2/3 of those that have returned say yay, then it can go forward.
Right. Which we'll elaborate on in the second half of the podcast.
Yep. So in summary, the constitutional amendments thus circulated called for a national delegate representative assembly every 3 years. The designation assembly was apparently chosen to differentiate these gatherings from the conventions at which each chapter had a vote. So this was separate from the national convention, like the official like national fraternity business. A regional convention every 3 years to be held the year preceding the national assembly. Province workshops to be held in the intervening years, one in the year after the National Delegate Representative Assembly and one in the year before the Regional Convention. Each delegate to the National Delegate Representative Assembly to have one vote, so one CPR, one PG, each one gets a vote. Each member of the National Council in attendance at a regional convention or a province workshop to have one vote at the meeting. Round trip airfare and hotel and meal expenses to be paid for each delegate to the assembly. And round number 7, round trip mileage expense for one car to be paid between the location of the delegate and the location of the regional convention or province workshop. I also want to point out, because this is not in this reading, I also read about before this, that the, you know, like how province workshops, each chapter gets 5 votes for it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I'm laughing because you know how they came up with the number of 5 votes for a chapter?
That's how many people you can fit in a car?
Yeah.
I knew it. I mean, it makes sense to fit in one car, but
It's still kind of silly, at least thinking about it. I thought they would.
That's true.
Yeah. And their argument for that was they were hoping that would get more brothers to show up to the province workshop if, you know, a chapter gets more votes.
That makes sense.
The executive committee minutes of July 15th, 1964 declare that these changes were approved, but did not report the numbers of votes cast. The minutes did note, however, that two official requests had been filed for amendments to the amendments that had been adopted. One from Beta Kappa Chapter asked for a revote on the entire question. The other from Iota Psi Chapter asked for modifications that would have provided for election of one additional collegiate representative for each region and for an increase in the convention tax to cover the additional expense. The executive committee ruled that ruled the Beta Kappa request out of order. The Iota Psi proposal was not recommended, but was allowed to come to the floor at 1964 convention.
Interesting.
The Iota Psi proposal was based on the premise that an additional collegiate representative from each of the proposed eight regional conventions. Remember, they were also talking about having like multiple provinces for one region to have one bigger event. Would balance the number of votes represented by the members of the executive committee, making the total number of collegiate votes equal to the total number of votes of the committee and province governors, thus balancing out the collegiates and potential alumni. Before the convention, Iota Psi circulated a letter to all collegiate members of the National Council outlining the proposal and urging their support. A similar letter went to the province governors from the chapter's advisor. When Executive Secretary Price Doyle learned of the proposal, he began an immediate campaign to defeat it, including a phone call to the Iota Psi advisor urging him to renounce the letters that had been circulated. The Iota Psi proposal was the issue of the smoke-filled rooms at the convention, and the debate on the convention floor was intense. In the end, the proposal was defeated because it was, in effect, a constitutional amendment that was not endorsed by the executive committee. It required a two-thirds vote on the two successive days at the convention for passage. It received a majority vote the first day, but not two-thirds. So that was the time that National Convention, or excuse me, the National Council was last called. It was to change the Constitution and bylaws to where instead of every chapter being representative or represented, it was switched to the system that we have today. And whether or not you disagree with it, that's just the context of the last time National Council was called.
It's very interesting. Going back that far, seeing when National Council was originally used or last used.
Yeah.
Before Mark Lichtenberg brought up National Council, I had never heard of it, to be honest.
So here's some insider baseball information for it. This isn't that public, so this is kind of cool information. So back in 2019, when the national emergency was going on, CPRs were trying to discuss ways on what can we do? What can we do to get the collegiate brothers involved, as well as, yeah, let's actually be able to sit down and talk it out. Obviously, the way that was put forward by the NEC was to have the emergency National Assembly meeting on November 30th of 2019. Another thing that was being considered by some of the CPRs was calling the National Council. And so I wonder, would things have been different if they would have called for that? Because if they would have convinced the members of the NEC to do it, would the NEC have been able to call on the National Council and make ballot like proposals? I have no idea, but it's all speculative at that point. But yeah, that was some shady stuff that we kind of read about, I will say.
I agree. There's a lot of different things in there that could have been seen in different types of light.
The argument that was made by Brother Underwood later on is that the concerns that collegiate brothers had of there being, you know, overwhelming power for the alumni to make decisions and leaving the collegiate brothers in the dust because they didn't have the majority, he argued that never really came to pass. For example, there, at least as of the time of that publishing, there was no recorded history of literally the assembly being split by all CPRs voting in favor of something, and then province governors and NEC voting in the opposite direction. So overall, he argues it was probably best to be done this way. Obviously, that is his opinion on that regard. Let's go ahead and get into part two.
Yes, straight into the National Counts ballot proposal, which came out today, March 3rd. Shall we jump just straight into question one, Ryan?
Yep, go ahead.
So actually, before I go into the question, this ballot has a 60-day discussion period, which we talked about in the last episode. But once again, I just want to talk about means that all brothers have 60 days to discuss what's going on in this ballot.
Yes. To make that very clear, there's no vote yet for it. But more importantly, that deadline, 60 days from today, the day as of recording and the day this was released, is May 2nd.
Exactly. And the day after May 2nd, May 3rd, is when the voting period will start, which is when the brothers of the National Council can vote onto whether the National Council or how the National Council feels about these six proposals.
Yep. Right. Do you want to go ahead and read the first question?
Yep. And I'm going to read this word for word just so we're not messing anything up. We're just reading it straight from there. So question one, shall National President Lichtenberg be allowed to utilize the National Council as defined in bylaws, Title 1, Article 8, Section 9, in an advisory capacity prior to the 57th National Convention and recommend proposed amendments to the bylaws to the National Council as an alternative to making all necessary decisions as the chief executive of the fraternity required to constitute a representative National Assembly, with those decisions being subject to ratification by resulting National Assembly at the 57th National Convention. Now, that's a pretty big thing. There's some big words in there. It's a little confusing. So, Ryan, do you want to break it down?
Yeah, so really taking all those fancy words, getting all that removed, pretty much what it's saying is, based on this referendum, does the National Council agree that National President Mark Lichtenberg, can he present the following amendments to the National Council to be considered for this upcoming National Convention? But yeah, that's pretty much the core of it. As far as discussing it, what were your thoughts on that immediately?
So immediately reading it, I was in favor of it to start, because I do think the National Council should be invoked here. I think it has it's a good decision to do that. But side note, under each of these proposals and their questions, there is a note in here that right. talks about what happens if a specific proposal doesn't pass or does pass. And in here they say, should question one fail, the members of the National Council are approving the alternative that the National President shall make whatever decisions he seems fit for the establishment of a representative National Assembly at the 57th National Convention.
So,
and to be honest, I don't really feel like we should give that power to the National President at this point.
Well, the argument being made here is either A, we allow this National Council to go through and have collegiate brothers, or at least let them be able to vote on this. That's really what question one is about. But yeah, we let them vote on this and be able to make the decisions for the upcoming National Convention, or we stick to what is currently defined as the National Assembly, which consists of the province governors that did not get Lichtensnap and their collegiate province representatives. In a way, this question is really a referendum of if during an emergency, can the national fraternity go against what's written in the national constitution and bylaws to have better representation? Because at the end of the day, even National President Mark Lichtenberg, he even addresses this in his letter to the fraternity saying, hey, this is technically against the national constitution and bylaws, but this is really the best thing that we can do going forward.
Right. And this question itself isn't saying for all future instances, something like this happens, that this can be done. This is only for this specific instance.
Right. Just limiting the scope to the first question. I'll go ahead and read question number two if we're ready to move on. Okay. So question number two, shall the members of the National Council serve as the voting delegates to the 57th National Convention held July 20th through the 24th of this year in St. Louis, Missouri, on a provisional basis only for the 57th National Convention?
Right. This one's pretty self-explanatory. It's instead of the National Assembly being the voting delegates, as is the normal for National Convention, for this National Convention, it would be specifically the National Council.
Right, yeah. As we kind of mentioned before, it's either this or the current National Assembly. Any province governors that had a chance of voicing dissent have been removed. So This is all that's left. So that's, yeah, can the National Council replace that?
All right, I'll go ahead and read question three. Shall a collegiate province representative who was duly elected at a province workshop presided over by a duly appointed and ratified province governor and whose term does not expire prior to July 20th, 2022, serve in addition to the members of the National Council as a voting delegate to the 57th National Convention held July 20th through 24th, 2022 in St. Louis, Missouri?
Yeah, so can CPRs be counted as a part of the National Council in this case?
How do you feel about that, Ryan?
I mean, I do. This was at the suggestion of the national president, and he argues, hey, the more voices, the better. And yeah, I could see it.
I'm a little split on this, actually.
Sure.
Because I believe that, yes, the more collegiate voices we have, the better. And all CPRs are collegiate. The only thing for me is that these CPRs only a handful of provinces have. I'm not sure the total number, but majority of provinces do not have a CPR. And so in a way, you're adding a more vote to the provinces who still do have their CPR and province governor. And to be honest, I don't think that's necessary. I think with having every chapter president be a part of the National Council and province governor that is still remaining, I think that is a good enough voting body. I don't think the CPRs need to be involved, but I am split.
That's a pretty good take, actually. I did not think of that. That's a good point. I think the main reason why this was thrown in here was kind of as like a compromise or concession to CPRs. In case if there's a, for example, when I was CPR, I stopped being chapter president so I could focus on doing that. It's probably for those guys that were like, hey, I was CPR expecting to be going to this national convention as a delegate. What gives?
Right. And I truly love all of our CPRs. I have not met a CPR that I didn't like. It's just, I think for this specific convention, I don't think the CPRs need to be involved. And I think we should stick strictly to what is defined as the National Council.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see that. Are we ready to move on to number four?
Yep, go right ahead.
All right. Shall the chapter vice president be able to serve as a chapter's national council delegate if the chapter president is unable to attend the 57th National Convention to ensure that each chapter is represented?
Right. So this is pretty simple as well, is if your president is unable to attend, whether the president wasn't planning on going, already has other things going on that he cannot cancel, then the vice president of the chapter can go in his stead and vote in his stead as well.
The only thing I'll add to this, I'm not saying I'm against this by any means, because at the end of the day, the more voices that can sit at the table, probably the better. Just keep in mind that chapter elections are coming up. When is that deadline, Jack? April 1st?
April... Elections are May 1st, installations are April 1st.
You mean the other way around? Where, like, you yes. have to start your
I'm
elections
very,
on
I'm
April 1st?
I'm very poor with dates, yes.
Yeah, and delegation.
April 1st, and then May 1st is installations, yes.
Okay. Now, people that are running for chapter president, that should be a consideration at this point, right? Unless if you're going to go with the incumbent and they're like, you know what, I wasn't able to go, but I would still like to be chapter president.
Right, I agree. However, there are extenuating circumstances, specifically with me. I am the president of the Epsilon Alpha chapter. However, I have an engineering co-op that I have to do over the summer, and I do not know if this co-op is going to let me miss a week of work just to go to a fraternity national meeting. And nobody else in the chapter at the moment wants to be president. And so I feel it's inappropriate to force somebody to become president only for them to gain a vote.
That is a very good point. Would it be fair to argue that anyone that's running for chapter vice president should be like, that should be one of the questions or requirements? Hey, if president can't go, can you go to convention?
I think that's more of a fair statement, because president handles a lot of things. Vice president does as well, but the vice president also stands in when the president isn't there. It's the basis of their position. And so that should apply to this as well, I believe.
We ready for number five?
Yep. So this one's short. Shall the national fraternity pay for reasonable travel and lodging expenses for each member of the national council?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and just quickly say the note as well, because it's probably important.
Yes. So note, if question five passes, the fraternity will pay reasonable travel expenses and double occupancy lodging expenses for each member of the National Council, which will be approximately four times the size of a typical National Assembly delegation. Individual delegates or their chapters would then only be responsible for the convention registration fee of $335, which provides meals. This would allow the fraternity to defray a significant portion of the delegate costs without straining the convention budget beyond reasonable limits, while providing means to allow each chapter to be represented without incurring unplanned financial hardship.
Yeah, so pretty much should the fraternity, you know, pay for reasonable travel and lodging expenses for each member. That does not include the registration fee or the food. The food comes with the registration fee.
Right, so each chapter, instead of having to pay for one member to fly out, lodge, stay, all of that, each chapter would only have to pay that $335 to get their voting delegate there and to be able to vote, eat, just be there for the convention.
What's your opinion on that?
Honestly, I'm going to use what you've been saying. The more voices at the table, the better. And I think this is one of the best ways to do it. There are chapters who are small who may not be able to afford a trip for one voting delegate. So if the national fraternity is willing to pay for that, I think it's needed. And especially at this time, it is such a crucial moment. It's such a fulcrum point for our fraternity that we need as many people there. We can always gain more money back, but we can't always fix a fraternity that's broken.
Absolutely. If anything, I am for that, but I don't think this is going far enough. I think it's ridiculous that the delegate is also responsible for paying for... they're still responsible for paying for the registration fee. $335 to a college kid? That's not cheap. And that's, I know that includes food, but yeah, so they're still responsible for forking that money over. And that's why I kind of wish this ballot had a way to add amendments to it. I don't think that's possible at this point.
Right. We just are dealing with what we're given, but I think with what we're given, I think it's definitely a must pass.
Definitely. I will say, hey, there's been a lot of alumni shouting out, how can we help? We want to be able to assist any way possible. How can we help for National Convention? Donate money to a brother that wants to go to convention. Doesn't even have to be the chapter president. I personally plan to help pay for any brother at my, you know, my alma mater that wants to go. I want to be able to assist with that. So the more collegiate brothers that we can have at this convention, including the delegates, the better. If we can help pay for those fees, that will help big time.
I agree. All right. You want to move on to question six? Last one?
Yep. I believe it's my turn to read.
It is.
Okay. So question six, this is like the ultimate one that people have been discussing online. Shall bylaws Title I, Article 17, Section 2, be amended to replace the opening phrase upon recommendation of the NEC with the phrase upon recommendation of the national president or the NEC, with corollary amendments to title to all the other parts that is referenced. Note, if question 6 passes, the language that appeared in the governing documents until the 2012 revision which when it was inadvertently removed will be restored, which would remove the necessity of a provisional resolution such as question one and any future emergency situations the fraternity may encounter. I just want to quickly add my two cents into here because I read that part of the National Constitution bylaws, and unfortunately, I did not write it down in my notes here, but that is pretty much saying, like, it defines what the National Council, like, how it can get called to action to amend the Title I of the National Constitution and bylaws, and Titles 1, 2, and 3 specifically, I believe. So that part right there, it currently says, upon recommendation of the NEC, the National Council can amend blah, 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 blah. So what they want to do, or what this question is proposing, is change it to where upon recommendation of the National President or the NEC. That way, the National President would be able to just call this by himself. Thoughts as a collegiate brother?
I am an older collegiate brother at this point. This is my fourth year in the fraternity, so I'm nearing the end of one's collegiate time in the fraternity. So I've experienced the entire national controversy and everything to go with it. I don't believe we need to give the National President any more power than he already has. I think we should be finding a way to make more checks and balances for the National President's power, not just allowing him to make a decision on his own. I also want to point out that, like we specified in question one, approving question one only applies to this convention. However, approving question six would mean that we don't have to have question one anymore. The President can just change back and forth between the Assembly or the Council as he wishes, as his recommendation is to be.
Well, or I just want to clarify that a little bit.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's more like, because the National Council, technically, their only real duty at this point is that they can make amendments to the Constitution and bylaws. If we add this, the National President can call for the National Council to do that at any point without NEC approval for that. So you are right. He could theoretically, you know, call the National Council and make a ballot and include as the first question instead of question one for this, making it to where should the National Council actually be the real representatives for this. I definitely agree with you, though. The main issues of this whole emergency situation is just how much power does the National President have? And this is another way for the National President to say, I don't want to work with the NEC. I'm going to do things my way. And in reality, the NEC should all have to work together, whether they like it or not, instead of just having an NEC full of yes men directly reporting to the National President, as this would help provide.
Exactly. All right. And then last but not least, on the bottom of the national ballot document, the document goes more in depth about the ballots and how this would work. So for every ballot that's issued, as they state here, for example, if 240 ballots are issued, then 121 ballots, which is one half of the disseminated ballots plus one, must be returned for the vote to be considered valid. So for every ballot that they send out on May 3rd, if less than half of them or exactly half of them get returned, then none of the votes count. Nothing happens. Nothing matters. However, if the requirement is met, where half plus one, then two-thirds of those votes have to be positive for the proposed measure to be adopted. So for question one specifically, if there are enough ballots that's half plus one and two-thirds of them are positive, then question one passes. But that can change for each question. Each question can be answered yes or no.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that sounds a bit more fair. So you still need a pretty high participation rate, so high representation. And then even out of those, you'll still need two-thirds people.
To be positive.
Yeah, for it to go through, which, I don't know. Ours, at least in current history, outside of fraternity stuff, everything has been so split 50-50. I feel like two-thirds is going to be kind of tough for a lot of these questions. And I think we can eventually make like a prediction kind of thing. I think that'd be fun to predict how we think each question will go. But let's save that for another day.
I agree. To be honest, although I think the collegiate body is pretty unified on some of these questions, maybe not all of them, but I think some of them are pretty unanimous. when you get down to it.
Which, speaking of which, if your brother that either agrees with that statement that we're unified, or if you are like, I disagree with this whole thing, reach out to us. We want to have you on SinfoniCast. You get to voice it out, and then we can maybe not unify, but that kind of conversation can help maybe develop into something to where there can be a unified body on how we should move forward for this national convention.
For sure. So that's a wrap on this episode of SinfoniCast. If you liked this episode, please share with one other brother you think might be interested. You can find SinfoniCast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you wish to be a guest on SinfoniCast, you can reach out to Ryan Smith or myself. My name is Jack Schmidt.
And I'm Ryan Smith.
And this is SinfoniCast, wishing all brothers good night.